All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. And Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. My next guest is fascinating. This is going to be a great. I'm really looking forward to this. Olympia Lapointe is an award-winning rocket scientist. She's an engineer and an author. She has written a couple of books. She's got a new one coming out that'll be coming out in the summer. And she's the author of Mathophobia, which is a book on how to overcome your fear of math. And she's on a mission to help everybody, including young women and people of color, to overcome their fear of math and sciences and get in the game. And this is really interesting, considering that one of the most popular movies in the country right now is a terrific movie called Hidden Figures, which is about that, which is about women of color and becoming engineers and scientists and helping NASA. And it's based on a true story, and these are real women. And we're going to talk to a woman who has had similar experiences that the women in the film and in the history of NASA have had. So let's welcome her to the show. Her name is Olympia Lapointe, and we welcome Olympia to the show. Hi, Olympia.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
How are you?
I'm doing well, and I am here in Los Angeles, and I'm so excited to be on your show.
Oh, well, thank you for being a part of the show. So let me first ask, what did you think of Hidden Figures?
Oh, my God. When I watched Hidden Figures, I was completely amazed. As I was watching Hidden Figures, it was like my life was on the screen, and I was watching it through Katherine Johnson's life story. And I'm just so honored to be able to share my story, as well as just really commend the writers and the producers and directors of Hidden Figures, because the Hidden Figures is just amazing in capturing what it is like to be a rocket scientist when you're a woman of color.
Yeah. It's a really, I'm so glad for the movie's enormous success and, you know, an Oscar nominations. It's a real crowd pleaser. And It's one of those movies where you walk out, first of all, you're really satisfied. It's a very crowd-pleasing movie. But I learned a lot, things that I had no idea. And that's one of the things I think is one of the strong points of the movie. Would you agree?
Oh, my gosh, yes. What I really enjoyed about the movie is that not only was it an excellent storyline, and was it really capturing the audience's attention in all parts of the movie, but more specifically, it actually captured the technical side of the mathematics and the science that goes behind actually launching rockets.
Yeah.
I was really, really happy to see that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really terrific movie. And then obviously we bring this up because you've had similar experiences. And yeah. And so you are a rocket scientist, you are an engineer, you are a woman of color. And how did you start, you know, I understand that you had an impoverished childhood, you were raised by a single mom. How does one go from that to becoming a rocket scientist? I know it's not an easy question to answer.
I really thank you for asking that question, because everyone's asked me the same thing. Like, how on earth did you do that? And it's surprisingly enough, if anyone is driven to do something in which they are passionate about, anyone can do it. But the question is, do you have the right resources and the people to help you in order to get it done? And that was me in my case. I went to a field trip when I was 6 years old at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory here in California, and I saw pictures of men launching rockets, and I told myself I wanted to just like that. But I was from South Central Los Angeles, didn't have any money, and I didn't have access to tutoring, and I failed algebra and geometry and trigonometry and calculus. And it wasn't until a teacher sat me down and actually tutored me and help me understand how important my brain was and how strong all of our brains are if we only understand how to use it. And it was through that experience that I realized that I had to believe in myself, and I had to turn away from the fear in which I clung to as a crutch and decide to pursue something that was more challenging than I thought I could handle, but it was what I was passionate about. And what changed my life around is realizing that each step towards something that I was passionate about allowed me to be able to see what I was capable of doing in my own life.
You know, it's interesting how one teacher takes an interest, how that changes somebody's life. This teacher that you're speaking about, what did she do for you? What and how did that happen? Did she go out of her way to help you out?
It was actually Mr. Provencio. He was a person that volunteered his time. He told the entire class, anyone who wants to come for their AP calculus teaching before the AP test, he would tutor them complimentary over the break. And I thought everybody was going to show up. And so here I was catching the bus 2 hours just to sit with him for a while. And I showed up and I was the only person there. And I'm like, oh, when I showed up. And I realized that it was because I took the initiative. It was that decision. It was that decision to do something that was not easy to do, but it was worthwhile.
Yeah.
And so I sat down with them, and it was just simple tutoring. I mean, that sounds so crazy, but what we do in people's lives, maybe sometimes the simplest thing that we do makes a big impact, and we'll never, ever know what it is that we do until maybe years later. And I just very much encourage every single person, and including myself, is that when we have the opportunity to actually help someone, it can change lives, and it changed the direction of my life specifically.
Yeah, you know, and I've had a personal experience like that too, Olympia. I had a teacher in high school who taught a writing class, an English and a writing class, and when I was in high school, I hated her because she was so tough. She was really tough and very demanding, and she was a tough teacher, and I just hated her. And then, you know, 2-3 years later, I was like, you know what? She's the best teacher I ever had. She's the seriously. And it's
wow.
Great. Yeah, no, she's the best teacher I ever had. I, you know, and I went on to, you know, I've written a lot of stuff. I've written plays and stuff like that. And I wouldn't have done that without her writing me like she did. And I've had the lovely opportunity of going back to my high school and thanking her and telling her firsthand. And I think that's important. It really is.
That is so amazing. Yeah. Thank you for sharing about your background. That is so amazing that teacher did that for you as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important. It really is. So you worked as a rocket scientist at NASA from 98 to 2008. Tell me what that was like.
Oh my gosh. It was exciting. It was challenging. And sometimes I wanted to tear my hair out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was exciting because I got a chance to see how the mathematics and such was being used in all these different types of ways. Everything from the chemistry and how the different components and oxidizers combine together so it would not melt the metal. I mean, things like that. I got to see how explosions actually happen and how it can actually break apart an engine, and the right explosion in the right place would actually launch something versus an explosion in just maybe a hair of a distance slightly to the right would completely blow out the side and kill people. I mean, that's how crazy it was. And I just was so fascinated to see how everyone came together. Everyone had their piece of the puzzle. I had the mathematics. I calculated the probability of catastrophic explosions within flight. Mm. There was another person that would look at all the chemical reactions, and there was another person that looked at the structural integrity to make sure that it wasn't going to break or bend with high vibrations. There was another person that would look at the turbo pumps on what was the exact speed of the pump to be able to drain an Olympic-sized swimming pool within 6 seconds. That's the type of technology that we were working with, and I was so excited about that.
So you worked. You helped launch 28 space missions, correct? And that includes Endeavour, Atlantis, Columbia, and Discovery. That must have been really exciting and gratifying.
Oh, it was. And the moment in time when I realized how important it was I was doing, it wasn't necessarily when I was supporting mission control, but rather I was invited to a it was a launch honoree project in Florida at the time. And my friend was being honored, and her son couldn't make it, so she asked me if I could be her guest. And I obviously said yes, because I was just so honored that he would even consider me to go. And we saw the launch close-up, and close-up was the closest would be was around 3 miles away because they launched it from Cocoa Beach, Florida. And when the space shuttle actually went up in the sky, it was such a vibration that we saw the light. It looked like a gigantic blowtorch from 3 miles away. And then the sound of the engines caused a vibration after the light that literally almost blew our clothes off.
Wow.
And I remember just being so fascinated, thinking, oh, my God, this is what I work on. And it launched, and it actually got in space. And when I saw that, like, close up, it just solidified everything in my head on how important this science launching was. And so I was so thankful to be able to help with, in many ways, help with Launch 28 missions to space.
Did you find some of the same challenges? I mean, the Hidden Figures took place in a different time period, obviously. But did you find some of the same barriers put up that happened to the women in that movie that happened to you?
Thank you for asking that question. Yes. When I saw Hidden Figures and I saw that it was 1961, it was right. When it first started off, and it continued to 1962.
Yep.
And as I looked at that and I looked at the segregation and I looked at the difficulties that they faced as women of color, I was in shock, because 40 years later is when I was doing this type of work. And I was surprised to find out I went through the same challenges. The first day when I worked it was the second day. The second day when I went to work, I was on the floor, and this man, who later became one of my biggest supporters and one of my biggest friends, and I'm so thankful for that, but he was completely shocked. He was shocked that, one, a woman started on the floor. Two, he was surprised that I was a woman of color. And three, I always maintained my femininity. I really enjoyed being feminine, still wearing skirts, still wearing my hair down, and being feminine. And remember, he looked around in complete shock, and he circled around me thinking, who is this woman? And I thought it was a museum piece, and I didn't know how to respond. And I laugh about it now, because he was the biggest mentor and support I ever had. But he himself was in shock.
Yeah.
And that was the type of a reaction I received, because there were so few women, let alone people of color, that was doing that. I faced many challenges, and it wasn't necessarily bad things. It was in a sense where I had to realize the value that I brought to the situation. Yes, there was going to be people who were going to be very difficult because they had never worked with someone like myself. But I was there for a reason. And as long as I kept in my head, like, I was there for a reason, and I'm going to make a significant difference here, whether or not I'm conscious of it or not, this is what I plan to do, whether it be in science or even the way that they perceive people of any background. I'm going to be existing here so they have the chance to see someone's qualifications and their character.
Yeah. Well, it's a great story. Could you hang on, Olympia?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Olympia LaPointe is with us, and she is the author of a book called Mathophobia, and she's got a book coming out again in the summer. And she's a real life, she's a hidden figure. She's an award-winning rocket scientist, engineer, and an author. And we'll talk more with her after we take this break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGilio here, 720 WGN. I'm your overnight dude here from 2 to 5 a.m. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NickDShow, facebook.com/NickDShow. My guest is a fascinating woman, Olympia LaPointe. She's an award-winning rocket scientist, an engineer, and an author. She's on a mission to help everyone, including young women and people of color, to overcome their fear of math and sciences. And we're talking about all of that and how it connects to, like, a real-life, not real-life, because the women in Hidden Figures were real. Real people, but how that still exists, and also about the fear of math. Olympia, welcome back to the show.
Hi.
I am one of those people, Olympia, that is terrified of math and not good at it. Now, you're the author of Mathophobia. When did you decide that you wanted to write that book? And give us a little bit about how people can overcome their fear of math. I'm terrible at it.
Oh, well, you can be great at it. You know that, right?
I'll believe you. So tell me about Mathophobia and how that started.
Well, Mathophobia, I failed algebra, geometry, and calculus, and chemistry. And it was because I didn't know how to write the mathematics. But more importantly, when I was tutored by the teacher in high school, I realized that I had to overcome my own fear, and it was the blocks of fear that were literally turning on the reptilian part of my brain and shutting off my frontal brain lobes. And this is the issue: when the reptilian part of the brain fires with fear, it shuts off the frontal brain lobes, and the frontal brain lobes are responsible for problem solving. Well, the problem solving is needed in mathematics. There's no way, absolutely no way at all, someone can actually transport a problem into a solution without using the frontal brain lobes. So in order to actually do well in mathematics, someone has to eliminate their fear so they can actually see the information. So if someone is experiencing fear, which I call mathophobia, the fear of mathematics, they'll have, like, sweaty palms. They'll start feeling anxious. They have a very difficult sitting down. They'll look at the numbers, and the numbers will become getting blurry in their head.
Wow.
Their heart will beat fast. And this is natural with people that suffer from mathophobia. And it is so severe, it's like a learning disability. And there's four types of mathophobia. It is Quincy the quitter. Quincy is a person that quits before he even tries. It's Donna the overdoer. She's someone that tries and tries and still misses the mark. Oh, she overdoes. Samuel the struggler, who's like really this brilliant Einstein in disguise, but he's angry because no one can understand how he communicates or how he thinks. And then there's Crystal the criticizer, who will always point fingers at everyone else. And this is like really how we look at and how we respond to fear. And I applied it to the mathematics. And this came about, this book, Mathophobia, came about is because I was actually hired by California State University Northridge when I was doing in 2007.
Okay.
They hired me to create a workshop for some of their students. And so I did the workshop, and the students really, really enjoyed it. And then over at Pierce College here in Los Angeles, they asked for the other workshop. And so I created that workshop. And before you know it, I started creating these workshops all for these people that wanted to go into the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics fields, and as well as anyone else that needed to brush up for their mathematics. And I realized I couldn't be two places at once.
Yeah.
So the easiest way for me to efficiently figure out how I could help everyone was to write down what it was that I put in these workshops at these college campuses and university campuses inside of a book. So everyone could be able to pick up the book no matter where they were and get the advice so they can really turn on their brain again. And I'm so thankful because we had the book on PBS, on show on PBS, on NBC and CBS, and various different shows where we've been able to help people understand how fear can literally paralyze the brain. And when someone is conscious of the fear, they can actually remove it from their brain.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah.
And I had to remove it from my brain, and that's how I became a rocket scientist. So I'm just showing exactly people what I had to do to master this mathematics.
Yeah, it's a great story, and thank you for sharing it with us. I really appreciate it. Now, before we let you go, Olympia, I have to throw this out there. When you see a movie like Gravity, or when you see a movie like The Martian, do you nitpick it?
Oh my God.
Can you have fun watching a movie like Gravity, or do the problems with it make you crazy?
I think this is the best question I think I've ever received. This is so great. Okay. I remember watching, Good Hunting when it came out?
Yes.
All right. I couldn't get past the fact that the chalkboard had incorrect math on it.
That's great. Oh, man. So Good Will Hunting, the math was wrong on the chalkboard, and that took you right out of the movie.
It sure was. And I thought it was just me. And I was sitting next to my friend, and he was a computer scientist. And I looked at him and I said, did you see that? He said, yes.
That's so funny. That's so funny because people look at things differently, Olympia. I had a jazz drummer in studio. We had a band in studio. And I had a jazz drummer in studio, and I asked him about the movie Whiplash, and he said, no, that's not how you set your drum kit up. And he... So anyway, that's great.
Oh, my God. Yes. But I must say, though, Martian was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was really accurate with the science. I mean, some stuff was, there was a couple of science fiction really out there things, like, for example, when there was the gravitational, they had the outer space space station, and then they were going to one room, and it was full gravity. That doesn't exist yet.
Okay.
So I have to verify it, though.
All right. It's always fun. This was great, Olympia. Thank you so much for joining us. People can get your book, Mathophobia. You're working on another book called Answers Unleashed. I mean, can we have you back on when that comes out, Olympia?
Oh, it'll be my pleasure. This has been so much fun.
Well, thank you so much. And your story is fascinating and inspiring, and we appreciate you taking the time to join us, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, take care. Olympia LaPointe, she's got a website, olympialapointe.com, and we have a link on our Facebook page to all of that information, facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, we're going to take a break. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN.